Hello and welcome to the Daft Office Podcast.
I couldn't give a rat's toss bag whether he thought I could coach or anyone thinks I can coach or could play.
Tip at the back. Tip. Look at him. Get it around him. Three in a row, Tip Rat.
Oh, no.
He's torn him to bloody shreds.
Get around him, Jim.
Woke up this morning from the strangest dream. I was in the biggest army the world has ever seen. We were marching as one on the road to the Holy Grail.
Distance.
Well, we want to freshen up here. This for the game, then. Kickers on the way. Siren's gone. They've done it again. They've done it again, the Cats. How about that? The Cat is still on the back. Magnificent.
Started out seeking fortune and glory. It's a short song, but it's a hell of a story. When you spend your lifetime trying to get your hands on the Holy Grail.
So here we are. What started out as a few pots upstairs at the All Nations pub back in March, where 14 teams were drafted with lofty ambitions to be playing on the last weekend in August, has now been dwindled down to just two coaches left to battle it out for premiership glory. Hello everyone, and welcome to this very special edition of the Daft Drafters Grand Final Podcast. In what can only be described as a dramatic weekend of Supercoach across preliminary final weekend, James Browning, coach of Armageddon, and William Horsfall, me, coach of Bent Knobs, have won through to the big dance. In what was arguably the match of the year between Bent Knobs and Sam Deboning, it was only fitting that it came down to the dying minutes of the final game of the round for the results to be determined. Whilst in the other preliminary final, it was Farmageddon outlasting the Eric Wasteboners in a war of attrition to get over the line. More about those finals to be discussed later in the podcast. For the moment though, sit back, relax and enjoy as we embark on the journey that is Grand Final Week. Starting off with a chat with a man who knows a thing or two about winning flags.
Okay, we're joined by a very special guest on the podcast right now, Ollie Hicks. It's wonderful to see you, mate. Thank you for finding some time to join me. How are you going?
Pleasure to be here, Will. Thanks very much. Yeah, going well. Excited to get stuck into the ins and outs of this upcoming granny.
For those unaware, which may be a few, considering Ole hasn't necessarily been all that involved in the season this year. But Hicksie is obviously coach of Gills Infidelities this year. And before we touch base on the main reason I've called you today, Hicksie, I just thought maybe we'd have a quick look at your season this year.
Will, before you jump into that, I've actually prepared some words that I just thought I could start off with. Sorry to interrupt. I've been advised by my legal counsel to issue a statement in regards to a trade that was actioned on the 10th of April 2023 between Gills Infidelities and Bent Knobs. So I thought I'd just get into that now.
Sure.
Supercoach is not an exact science. Oftentimes, supercoaches must take calculated risks that on the surface appear to overly favour one party. This is the nature of the enterprise. When you've been in the industry for as long as I have, you learn to trust your instincts. Sometimes these coaches' calls pay dividends, sometimes they do not. In this case, it did not. Was Josh Rochelli and Taylor Adams worth a direct swap with Rowan Marshall and Angus Brayshaw? As it turned out, no. Would I make the same trade again? 1,000 times yes, if my gut told me it was the right thing to do. And it's worth remembering that this is the same gut that carried me to a premiership in the Daft Drafters inaugural year. Nevertheless, I regret any hardship I caused to other super coaches in the esteemed Daft Drafters League. It was not my intention to cause angst. Rest assured that I have laid off a significant portion of my organization's talent and recruitment officers, and I will instead turn to a Moneyball style of team management for season 2024. I hope we can put this episode behind us.
Ollie, thank you very much. I'm glad you touched on it before I had to, because I was also going to raise said trade, because it has caused some angst amongst the group, including on the weekend.
I thought it was important to address it early on, because I'm sure that's what everyone's thinking. It's important that we can put this episode behind us, but I of course want to be held accountable for my actions. So if anyone's got any questions, they can contact me.
Of course. And it's also worth noting, just put some context behind that call, which obviously hasn't turned out in your favor, but at the time you had Ron Marshall effectively sitting on your bench, as you can only field one ruckman, as most members of this league will understand. So he was definitely someone you were looking to fish around. And Richelli at the time was averaging, I believe, in the high 80s, giving 90 a nudge, which would have put him probably in the top 10 to 12 forwards in the competition.
That's exactly right, mate. I mean, with the gift of hindsight, of course, it doesn't look too great in the cold light of day. But at the time, you know, having advised, members of my team about what the squad requires, it seemed like the way to go. It was a bit of a line ball call, and evidently it speaks for itself now. But at the time, it seemed like the right call.
Yeah, of course. Now, it wasn't necessarily a successful season. Well, I suppose it depends how you define successful over in your headquarters this year. But look, when you've got the runs on the board, as you do, you're ready to have an off year. And following in the footsteps of Sam Mitchell, maybe you felt like this was a bit of a rebuilding year, time to sort of bottom out and reassess and look to sort of launch your next premiership window. Is that how you viewed things?
It is, mate. I mean, I took to the board a vision for the next 10, 15 years. We'd like to win another flag in the next 5 years. And so I went to the board and I said, look, we're obviously sort of bottoming out at the moment. We're in a rebuilding stage. I thought it would be good for us to action that along as quickly as possible with the potential addition of another side in the Dark Thrusters League. I thought better to bottom out now and sort of, you know, suffer those losses now than, you know, in 4 to 5 years' time when we'll be competing with, you know, Tasmania and a potential other side to the Draft Drafters. So, and they accepted that. And there's going to be a lot of pain for Gill's Infidelity supporters in the next couple of years, but hopefully we can stick that because we certainly do have premiership aspirations.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, some of the players you drafted this year, whilst there's absolutely no guarantee you'll have them next year, but you know, Jai Caldwell and Josh Ward, some really exciting prospects, which again, there's absolutely no guarantee you'll have those players next year, but just the fact that you fielded them gave you a bit of insight into their week-to-week sort of operations and giving you a better understanding around some of that talent around the league. So completely understandable.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, no, you do. You need to blood the young blokes. And that's the kind of atmosphere we're trying to create at Gill's Infidelities.
Now, the main reason I wanted to get you on, Hixie, because we've had a number of new members come into the league over the last 2 to 3 years, and they wouldn't have necessarily known the history of the league and the fact that we're in the presence of, well, two premiership winning coaches, if you include myself. But in the inaugural season, as you touched on earlier, the 2020 season, you did lift the Premiership Cup. I just wanted to take a bit of a trip down memory lane to lead up to this year's grand final and just get your memories and perspectives on what was a famous Premiership win back in 2020.
Well, it's an exciting time this time of year, Will, as I'm sure, well, you've experienced before. You've got the runs on the board, as it were.
Multiple times.
I know that there's a lot of nerves. There's a lot of media talk. Just best to shut that out as best you can. I know that for me, the most consistent source of pressure was coming from people telling me, Hixie, you haven't made a single trade for the course of the year. You're entering the finals. Surely it's time to think about one. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't waver. Mentally, I was sort of flip-flopping as to whether I would follow that advice. But I mean, ultimately, like I referred to in my statement, trust your gut. Trust your gut. My gut said, you know, these guys have, you know, the minutes in their legs. and the more experienced players were the Tim Kellys were, as Will Fisher can attest, were starting to come good. So I knew that I would do well to stay with the team that I'd put up for the whole year, and ultimately that paid dividends.
Yeah, it was simply remarkable. There's no other way to put it. I've never once in any fantasy league I've ever been in across any sport seen that work as a tactic, but nevertheless, you showed it was possible. I remember a couple of genius selections. It was Jack Steele, who you were riding that year really hard, and you managed to pick Christian Petrarca on his breakout year, which is interesting because, you think of Petrarca now, top five player in the competition, but prior to 2020, he was still trying to find his way a little bit. And I remember you, picking him up. He would have been probably a pick in the maybe 30s or 40s. And and that was sort of the coming of age for him.
Yeah, I actually seriously put a bit of thought into Petrarca because I knew he was a good player, but he's just fitness from the 1 or 2 years prior to that. I don't know if you can remember, but it kind of seemed like, you know, he was a good footballer, but he just, I don't know, didn't have the minutes in the legs, or at least just didn't have an engine. And then, I don't know, I saw some preseason footage of him. And he looked absolutely electric. I think he'd probably shed a few pounds and put on a few pounds where it mattered. So
the opposite of Jake Stringer.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, the inverse. That was a good pick actually. And ditto Steele. Not that I watch many Saints games, but the numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, I must admit, I was very confident going into that week. I thought, I remember I was doing all the loophole stuff off the bench. I thought, Hicksy hasn't changed his team. This is going to be beautiful. I'm going to win it in the first year. And as the weekend rolled on, a sense of fate was coming across me, and in a bad way. And and of course, you took the chocolates. And there's that famous picture.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest weekends of my life, I think. That man there was something else. And then the boys getting together.
Beautiful. And obviously in the lead up to this year's grand final, there's myself and a good friend of yours, Jim Browning, in this year's decider. Are you happy for James to see him finally break through for his first grand final appearance?
Couldn't be happier for the bloke. Having a look through some of the results of the last, you know, his last five or six matches, he just seems like Mr. Consistent, doesn't he? Obviously, he's managed to get to the top end of things this season, but just an incredible reward for effort, for putting in the hours on and off the field. And more importantly, he's got three Hawks players in his starting lineup. So, Jim, kudos to you. Obviously, Sicily was on everyone's radar at the start of the year, but to back Warple.
That was impressive.
I don't know if he started with Warple or he's traded him out. I don't know if you,
I think he traded him. I was looking at his draft. I think he picked him up. He did draft him.
Oh, he did. See, that's a lot of confidence to put in a bloke that forgot how to play footy for 3 years or 2 years. Yeah. So that was great. And then Hardwick as well, which it might have been traded. I'm not sure. But, so kudos to you, mate. You're missing a ruckman. You could do with a Rowan Marshall, I suspect.
Well, funny you mentioned Blake Hardwick, who's a great player, by the way. He actually spent a bit of time on the bent knobs in the second half of the year. So I'm hoping there isn't a bit of a revenge game for Blake this week against my mob.
I did not know that.
And equally as impressive for James, his ability to manage his team whilst overseas, which is also very commendable.
Absolutely.
I imagine he had a classic team going as well. So very impressive season. And well-deserved appearance in this week's grand final.
I'm really looking forward to see how is it Tristan Zeri, if he can get it. Well, he'll be up against Wits, I suppose.
He will be, down in Launceston, I believe.
Yeah, somewhere in Tassie. No, he's fucked. Yeah, I don't know, Jimbo.
Well, it's funny, he's got Cherry, because Goldie was on the waiver wire for a little bit there towards the end of the year. I think he might have stuck that with Tristan when he might have been better off swapping him over to Goldie. But Anything can happen.
Trust the instincts. Trust your gut.
And as you know, Hicksy, anything can happen in grand final week. So, mate, it's been great to catch up with you and to touch base with a premiership winner. One of the legends of the league, and glad to hear you mentioned going around again next year. That's going to please a lot of people, knowing that they can.
Yeah, well, I figure you can treat my $50 as a donation. But next year I think, like I say, we've cleaned house a little bit with some of the team selection and talent officers. So expect big things. Expect big things for season 2024.
I might even, if I take home the chocolates this year, use that money, maybe the $50 of your money to buy a Hawks membership, perhaps. Like an exciting team moving forward.
I think you should. Not only to support, a young up-and-comer, but I assume you've got a KO membership, Will?
I do.
Well, here's a tip for your listeners. It's actually cheaper for some clubs to buy a membership, like a 12-month membership for a footy team, such as the Hawks, because many of them have 12-month KO subscriptions inbuilt. Right. And so the price of the membership ends up being cheaper than 12 months of KO membership.
Okay. I see where you're coming from there. That's savvy.
Anyway, that's by the by. I don't know, maybe going into next year.
That's awesome. All right. I'll leave you there, mate. Thanks again for your time today, and I'll look forward to seeing you next year.
Pleasure talking to you, Will.
Hey, mate. Okay, always good to catch up with good mate Ollie Hicks. Thanks again for Hicksy for jumping on. But now to the main course of why we're here, and I'm joined by Jim Browning, grand finalist coach of the Farmageddon boys. We are, of course, just days away from the start of grand final. Jim, welcome to you.
Thank you, Horse. It is an absolute pleasure to finally break the hoodoo and crack into the big dance. So I'm proud to be here, mate.
Yeah, finally is the word. I think you've at least made prelim finals in two of the three seasons so far in the lead up to this year. So you have struggled a little bit in the past getting over that hump. So it must feel good to finally break through.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think I probably, back when we started this league, came in with a bit of a reputation as the Supercoach nut. Even though that's more from the classic format, it does put a bit of pressure on to perform, and probably haven't lived up to that so far, but hopefully a flag can silence the critics, you might say.
Yeah, absolutely. And nerves, how, have you managed to get plenty of sleep in, start the week, looking at the magnets, just sort of shuffling them around, dreaming about what could be on Sunday evening?
Yeah, I've been sleeping like a baby, so that's been good.
Good.
But
good.
There's definitely some nerves. Obviously, a massive underdog going into the weekend. It's giving me, Geelong versus Port Adelaide in 2007 vibes at the moment. it'll be interesting to see how we go. I know you mentioned to me the other day that the underdog has actually managed to win. The person that was the underdog going in has managed to win in each of the last few years. So it's probably a pattern that is due to break at some point, but hopefully the trend continues.
Yeah, I think it's a good spot to be, underdog going to grand final week. Last two seasons, last year I was quite a big underdog, almost, I reckon, probably similar to this year against Crawls. Crawls had a dominant team, and like I would have thought, if you just team to team, he's projected would have been like at least a couple hundred over mine, or maybe like 100 over mine. So and then Hicksy in the first year probably went in as a slight underdog against me and took home the chocolate. So yeah, it's good. The trend's your friend. As you say, it's probably due to break, but certainly you should be coming in with high hopes, Jim, because anything can happen. And as you say, it's potentially due to break that trend. But then the other thing is, I've been putting out big scores the last couple of weeks, and you know that's just not going to continue forever. So perhaps that could also work in your favor that you know I'm due to have an off week, which definitely could come this week. So yeah, it's a big game, and I'm definitely not taking it lightly.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed for that, because I think yeah, while you've been putting out some big scores, I think I've been a little bit unders. You know, despite my team not being that great anyway. Guys like Sicily, he hasn't cracked a ton in the last 2 weeks, and he's been my best player all year. And just generally a pretty sort of low performing couple of weeks, even by my standards. So yeah, hopefully if those two things sort of swing back the other way, then I might stand a chance.
Yeah, it's interesting. And before we jump too much into the preview, it's interesting because normally how this would work is you as the commissioner would be interviewing the two grand finalists. And this year I've taken over commissioner duties. And so I'm taking your responsibility and I'm interviewing you. Then I'm also the other part of the interview. So it's an interesting dynamic that the commissioner, current commissioner and ex-commissioner both find themselves in the grand final this year. So I wonder if there'll be any people claiming that we're cheats or we've tampered with the league whilst those allegations have already been floated earlier in the year, which was addressed earlier in the podcast with Ollie Hicks. But now we will jump into sort of a preview and looking at some of the key matchups. We won't spend too much time, Jim, necessarily looking back at the season it's been, because we did catch up in the lead up to the finals. The listeners will remember I was sort of having a look at looking at a bit of your team and seeing what sort of how it's unfolded during the year. So we'll look more so ahead to the matchup itself. And so you started the finals in third on total points, Jim. I was looking at, I think we discussed, as I said, in the lead up to the first week of finals, and you've dropped down to six. So as you said earlier, your form has sort of tapered away a little bit. You had that big week one finals win against George, which I think that was probably the big one for you, because not only does it give you the week off the following week, then you got the favourable matchup against the weaker waste bonus side. So that just shows the value of banking that first win in the top four position.
Yeah, wow. That really paints a picture. I didn't realise I'd dropped down to sixth on total points. That's big, particularly given that I imagine a lot of those sides that have gone past me are sides that haven't even been playing, so probably not paying too much attention to their sides.
Yeah,
and still going past me. So, yeah, goes to show it's I've been lucky to get to the grand final, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a slide. I think teams that have come past you, like George, you know, he was in it. Oh, actually, I knocked him off a couple of weeks ago. Sammy Haddon's team is actually really good. He's probably stiff not to have made it further into the finals. I think all of us come back, and I got him in the first week of finals, probably in a good week. I think Dusty was missing that week as well. So Sammy Hans up there, and also J-Rod, who's had a pretty good team all year. So yeah, I've dropped a six, but there's some pretty good teams around you actually that, yeah, despite not probably checking their team, have still put up some good scores.
Yeah, for sure.
Looking, yeah, so just having an eye to this game, is there anyone in particular over at the Knobs that you're worried about, that sort of you feel like the week will hinge on their performances?
Yeah, well, I've actually, so looking at the fixture, because I've opened up your team, and obviously the big one for me is Rowan Marshall, who can put up some massive scores, and I think that often in the ruck it can be matchup dependent. So first thing I did when I saw, when you know, knowing that Rowan Marshall was in your team, was like, okay, who have the Saints got? So that they're up against the Lions, so you know that's probably, you know, neither here nor there in terms of, you know, they're not super easy nor are they super hard in terms of a ruck matchup. So yeah, I mean, he makes me a little bit nervous. Obviously Petrarca can go bananas, but he probably, I'm not sure, I haven't been following his form super closely, but he hasn't been putting up massive scores in the last couple of weeks, has he?
Yeah, no. Well, definitely, well, he's still got 100. It was actually probably the thing which got me over the line against Livers in the end. Like, he was having a really quiet game,
and like well below his average. I think he might have been on like 65 or something at three quarter time, and then he bobbed up with like eight touches, a goal, and a couple of goal assists in the last, and still pulled 100. So that fourth quarter, like 40 point performance, you know, might have been the difference in the end. So yeah, he's tapered off a little bit, partly because he's been playing a lot more forward, not as much as a out and out midfielder. So that's something. But yeah, I mean, Marshall's been huge in the finals. I think his 5 round average is 128. So
yeah,
he's as a result of a couple of favorable matchups, like he played Geelong last week without any recognized ruckman really. So as you say, that's a big consideration.
Yeah, for sure.
Cherry in that department, Cherry v Wits. So
yeah, right. See, yeah, that's been a big sort of letdown for me, I guess, through the back half of the year, because I had Cherry there when he was a sole ruck, and when he is a sole ruck, he does score really well. Like I would expect 100 average from Cherry if Goldie's not on the side.
Yeah.
And start of the year, they were playing Goldie in the reserves because they wanted Cherry to be their number one man. But when Cherry got over his foot injury and came back, I expected that to continue. But they've continued to play Goldie alongside him, which has really cost me.
Mm. Yeah, it's been a hard one to track the whole year, that sort of relationship or partnership, because, I mean, Goldie was on the waiver wire, like, in the lead-up to finals. I think Frog picked him up. Which I assume, did he get injured? I can't really remember. Or maybe he'd just been dropped or something. But the fact he was on the waiver wire probably shows maybe he was injured for a bit. But, and then Frog picked him up, and I think he peeled off like 300s in a row or something. So it's just, you know, trying to pick who the right option out of those two is all year has been tricky.
Well, I had Goldie. When Sherry got injured, I just straight swapped him for Goldie. So I was like, all right, another number one ruck option, like there's you go. And Goldie performed quite well for me, and then picked up Cherry when he returned and just held on to Goldie for a week or two, and Cherry was going quite well, so sacked off Goldie. I don't know how much longer it was until he came back into the side, I don't think it was long, and then stuck in sort of no man's land there in the end. But
Well, the one person in particular I'm hoping has a big week is Joshy Dacos, because it's been a bit of back and forth between me all year. And I'm not sure if anyone remembers this, because I did make a point of it that it was a ridiculously shit call by you on the night. But on draft night, I picked up Josh Dacos with like literally my probably third last pick. So it was like it was probably one of the picks of the draft, to be honest.
Big time.
Yeah. But you said, because he was the All-Australian last year, or he was close to?
Yeah. So I didn't actually go after the pick per se. It was more, I sort of was like a bit, oh, interesting. Like, I think I said it was controversial or something like that. And I just felt that he'd peaked and hit his ceiling, and he wasn't getting any better. And your argument was that he's only getting better. I thought that, like, you know, he may have made All-Australian last year, but he's never going to get close to that again. Like, he's not that good.
Well, I reckon your point was more, like, he's a good player. You know, made an All-Australian team. You've got to be a good player to make an All-Australian team. But the fact that he only averaged what he averaged in an All-Australian year, which I'm just looking that up now, it was 78. So,
yeah,
if you average 78 as an All-Australian, then, you know, there probably isn't a lot of scope for him to then average... You know, I with that sort of pick, it was like in the 150s or something. You just hope they average 85 or 90. But then, yeah, he's averaged 100. Like, he's been disappointing at times during the year, only because his stats are really good, but it doesn't always translate to a good Supercoach score, which can be interesting, because you watch games and normally he's such a beautiful ball user. He doesn't generally waste it. So I'm not sure. Yeah. It doesn't get a lot of contested stuff.
Well, that's what I was about to say. I think it may be due to that role, in terms of like being a winger, you're not getting the contested ball, neither are you getting necessarily the goal assists and the scoreboard impact, and that sort of thing. So you might get really good numbers, but that's how you score well on a wing, is by getting a lot of numbers, like lots of marks and lots of disposals, yeah, as opposed to getting really good value for your disposals in terms of points.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon being able to hit the scoreboard helps too as a winger. Like, if you're not going to average a goal a game, but I think he's kicked, what's he kicked, 3, 4? He's probably kicked 12 or 13 goals, yeah, which, you know, so half a goal a game or something. I think that's pretty good return. And there probably wouldn't be that many wingers, I wouldn't have thought, in the league who kick more than him. So hoping for a big way from Joshy. It was funny, that got me thinking about that other call that we sort of like go back and forth about, the Sam Flanders one. And I actually said the other day, you're a clown for saying that Flanders is going to be good, but he's actually on, I think, Stu's team. And if you exclude his first four games, I'm not sure if he had a different role or something. He played four games and then like scored poorly and then must have been injured for a good like 10 games. Like, came back in week 15 and has averaged 104 since. So he's actually probably since week 15, probably like a top five forward.
Oh my.
So I got to eat my words a little bit, but the fact that you don't have him, you haven't got to enjoy that.
See, I didn't even know that. I saw that he dropped a big 130 after you called me a clown for picking him. So I thought that was quite funny, but I didn't realize he'd actually had a good run of form.
And that got me to, click on his profile. And then I was like, last 3 or 4 games, he's actually pumped out a few tons. it's also, I mean, I've sort of been mentioning it as it's sort of been going on, but going into the grand final, I actually haven't got the exact number, but effectively I haven't lost since round 12. So I need to run the numbers on exactly how many games in a row that is, but interestingly, just from a historical season perspective, so I lost every game between round 6 and 12. So I lost 7 in a row, and so I was sitting at 3-9 in the win loss column, and I think I was like 11th or 12th on ladder. I was literally probably, if I lost the next game, it might have almost been like season over. It was that dire. And just one brought two, and then two brought three. And got on the roll. So I'm averaging 1,193 over the last 4 weeks. But this is the one I'm worried about playing you this week. He's got 3 games of over 160 this season. Playing the Hawks at the G. I just feel like, I'm just picturing Sicily at the G. He knows how to just loop around, get a few, like all those kick marks. Fremantle's forward line is horrendous, so he's just going to probably take like 6 intercept dukes. So I'm penciling Sicily in for like, his floor, I think. You don't want to get too carried away, but I think his floor is like a 110, 120, and then he could go north of that. Up around 150, so that's a concern for me playing you this week.
Touch wood, I am relying on a big score from the Sick Dog. I tend to agree with you. Like, obviously, I'm pretty sure Fremantle do give up a lot of points to defenders. Mm. Fingers crossed for a big score from the Sick Dog.
Yeah, interestingly, my hero really in the last couple of weeks in these last two finals has been Tommy Atkins. 122 into a 115 for Tommy, it was a guy that was, I was almost thinking about, you know, could make way, and I end up dropping, I think, Hardwick or Impey or someone. But so Atkins has been someone I've been riding the last couple of weeks. And I was having another sort of look about just total points, because that can often be a good indicator about, you know, why someone is at the top of the year. Because it's not necessarily all about averages, it's about a player who scores well and is available. And both Goulden and Petrarca are in the top 5 for total points this year, who are both obviously part of the Knobs. So those two have sort of been the staples. Goulden averaging 110, Petrarca's a bit more than that, I think maybe like 115 or something. So,
Where'd you get Goulden?
He was my third pick, but it was pick 37. So,
yeah. So, he was a big preseason hype, man. So, he was always going to go relatively high.
Yeah.
I suppose.
And he's like, he's the third highest averaging forward. So like, he hasn't gone completely bunter, well, but I think, yeah.
I imagine you would have been slightly disappointed with the pick in the early part of the season, but back half he's gone bananas. Yeah. He's been really good.
Yeah. Yeah, really, yeah. That's my season sort of turned around when, because I was struggling to get any primo scores other than Petrarca. And like even, you know, Marshall was going okay, but it's only really been the last, yeah, six or eight rounds that he's gone absolutely bunter.
I think for me, Noah Anderson is someone that really needs to lift. Like, he's a guy that I picked to be, you know, a bit of a match winner, a bit of you sort of like, you know, you might average, you know, close to 110, between 105 and 110. And, you know, he's averaging 104.5, which is not that bad, but he's been slightly disappointing, I feel. Maybe he's been up and down with an average like that, but I feel like he's produced some pretty lackluster scores.
Yeah,
he's got an 89, 76, 82, 91 in the past 6 weeks. So, you know, they're not horrible scores, but he's someone that, you know, I need to be, you know, scoring really well because he was a high pick for me. There's not too much behind him. So, from him.
Yeah. How have you rated Cogs's season? Because he was your second pick. Pick 19, so like that's a very high pick. Like I think I took Petrarca at pick 20. So there's definitely some good players still on the board around that 20 range. Have you considered that a successful pick?
That's a hard one to judge. I think that one sits firmly on the fence because, I mean, the reason I took him there ahead of the likes of Petrarca is because he's obviously got the forward status right, so that makes him that bit more valuable and. For me, the research I'd done going in told me that he was going to return to a full-time midfielder's role, which he historically has scored really well in. So he's got a 101.1 average, and I was probably hoping more for, you know, a 105 plus from him. But I think in the end, you take over 100 for a forward. I don't think you can be disappointed with that, even if it is an early pick. It's probably not, you know, outstanding return on investment, but hard to be too disappointed with that.
Yeah. Like if you had your time again, and the other thing I think worth factoring is he's played every single game. So he's been very reliable as someone you can pick each week. So you'd probably take that. I don't know. 101, played every game, scored 126 for you last week in the prelim, which is handy.
Yeah.
If you told me he was going to drop a 126 in a prelim, I'd probably pick him there. Bailey Smith's probably
handy when you're coming up against the Bombers in round 23, isn't it?
Yeah. I wish I'd picked up Jesse Hogan even. but Bailey Smith is probably here in the grand final, obviously had a good year, but that one's an interesting one, Jim. Was your fourth pick. Fourth pick, and he's averaging, is it 80?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, he's been. I don't know what's happened to him. He's had a horrible year.
Imagine you probably haven't watched a ton of footy while you're over there outside Don's games. Yeah. So you wouldn't have caught like any. I don't know. He did this thing the other day where he got a free kick and he just then went to like sort of turn and play on and then just like fell over his own feet and like got caught in the ball. And it's just like. That doesn't happen. Like AFL footballers don't do that. It was weird. It just looked really retarded and sort of reflective of where he's at the moment. Just, not playing good footy at all.
Other than that, I've picked up your scraps in Blake Hardwick. So he dropped a 79 on the weekend. It's about all I expect from him, really.
Yeah.
Someone like a Hobbs, it's obviously not great having him on your field, but. It's just not much on the waivers.
Is the Goblin suiting up for you this week, or are you going to keep your cards close to your chest on Wednesday night?
Cards close to the chest.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, I mentioned to Hixie, the Hardwick one's going to be an interesting one because, he was on my team for a little while there, so it'd be pretty rough me to watch him go and drop like a 110 on me or something in a granny. When the opposition has a really good forward, like probably small forward, then Hardwick generally plays like a really hard tag / lockdown role on that player. Like, for example, Petrarca was there for a fair bit of last week and shut him down. And he played on Waitman a couple of weeks back and completely shut him down. So I'm not sure that's the role he's been playing all year, but if he does play that role, it sort of limits his offensive output a little bit and hence his scoring struggles a little bit.
Well, I don't think Fremantle really has anyone that's going to threaten him too much in that department. So hopefully he gets a little bit more of a free reign.
Yeah. Not sure if you saw, I picked up, I've done a few pickups this week. Actually, I noticed you haven't done any. But a man by the name of Nick Hind, who he's probably going to, I'm just going to go and say it, he's probably looking like likely starter for Ben Nobbs this week, Friday night under lights against the Pies.
Interesting.
He
scored well on the weekend in a 100-plus point loss.
Yeah, well, I kept seeing because he's been scoring right for a while, and then you can't, Hindy, it's probably just like cheap pill, like, don't trust him. And first and foremost, his position isn't that secure. Like, he's been in and out of the team sub. But then I went back and looked, and four scores in a row where he hasn't gone below 90. So that is a starting point. It's not bad, including a 137. So pending he starts in terms, he's not sub, and he gets that sort of nice half back role. I'm hoping a minimum is probably looking at like an 80, and they're playing a pretty good team, so the ball should be down there a little bit. So yeah, just Hindy just sort of, he's impressed the coaches at training to start the week, and he's going to make selection very difficult.
Hey, there you go. I've probably missed a trick there. That's some good numbers.
But Jim, I know you've got another engagement to get to, so we might wrap it up there. Thank you for your time and previewing this season's grand final. It's going to be a massive contest. Will you be staying up? What's the time like over there in terms of what's like a Saturday afternoon, Saturday night game for you to watch?
Yes. So the we're 9 hours behind. Basically, the Saturday night games start at like sort of 10:25, 10:50 kind of thing in the morning. But like a Saturday afternoon, like a, the 1:45 game starts at 4:45 a.m. So the early Saturday games are tough to watch, but the night games are not too bad. We'll see. The last game of the round I'll be awake for, so be able to follow along to the end of the result.
And you'll be watching Friday night, I imagine, because that's a pretty good time for you. And I've got a couple of members playing, Dacos, Cameron, and potentially N Hind. So it could be an interesting start to the week. It's always that Friday night game, you've got a few players. It's nice to get a few scores on board. If those guys underperform, the nerves will kick in a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I've obviously got Tom Mitchell playing in that game, so hopefully he pumps out a good score. Be nice to see the Tom Mitchell of old, wouldn't it?
To go back, hopefully Tommy Mitch just do a half forward flank.
Fair chance that might happen.
that reminds me, Jim, to congratulate you for managing the team whilst overseas. It's a very commendable effort to make your way through to the grand final whilst doing it overseas. Would have been actually pretty incredible if both yourself and Livers were the grand finalists to overseas lads. But congratulations on a wonderful season and all the best this weekend.
Thanks, mate. You too.
Okay, so there we have it. Another grand final edition of the Daft Drafters podcast in the books for another year. Thank you to 2020 Premiership winning coach Ollie Hicks and 2023 grand finalist Jim Browning for joining me. This year's final is shaping up as an absolute cracker, touted as the Commissioner Cup, as myself as the current Commissioner takes on ex-Commissioner Jim. To tie a bow on the season, I will leave you with the grand final selections from various other coaches around the league. Good luck to both teams.
So, Jim and Horse facing off in the final. Horse has somehow found his way to the grand final yet again. Apologies, I'm a bit under the weather, so if I sound like Bill's voicemail, just excuse me. Look, on paper, I think I'm going to have to go with Jim. I do love the triple header of Cogs, Bazlenka and Sicily. And be very tin ass, of course, as per usual, to see even Bradbury and come through and take the gold. But I'm going with Jim this time, so screw you, Horse.
It's Elliot, coach of the Cuties, here with my tip for the grand final. As much as I'm a proponent of sharing is caring, I'm just not quite sure how Jim's managed to drag that shoddy side to the grand final. So I think it's a pretty straightforward one here. I'm going to go Horse by 2.5 lengths.
My tip for the 2023 Daft Drafters grand final is a guy who's been on one of the most incredible winning streaks we've ever seen in Daft Drafters history, Bent Knobs.
Wowie, here we have it. Farmageddon v the Bent Knobs. What a grand final. Down here in Squadron Land, we are enjoying our summer break in Cancun. 1, 2, 3, Cancun. We'll be supporting one team, the better team all year, and that's Farmageddon. I think he's got all it takes to go well in the big dance. If the footy gods are out there, then our current commissioner may see an early subbing out for one of his ruckmen. veto trade. Don't say I didn't warn you. Superb season from both coaches. Best luck in the big dance.
It's all come down to this. The battle of the biggest Essendon nuffs in the league. The funny thing is, Horse is already talking dynasty after talking to him at footy training tonight. He reckons it's 0-1 to 0-3 Lions type. And he reckons he's Vossie hard over the ball. I'm not too sure about it. The only worry about JB not winning this week is he doesn't have enough Essendon players, and it's a blight on his support of the club. If he had Parrish, if he had Merritt in the team, he'd be more likely to win. But I think, unfortunately, I'm taking Horse to build on his dynasty this week. I think his team's, with his turnaround of players, has become really good. And he just seems the in-form guy, not having lost since round 14. So good luck to both players, though. JB, I hope you do get the W, but good luck to all.
I'm taking the Jackhammer Horseful in this year's Daft Drafters grand final matchup. He's been lucrative on the waivers all year and will no doubt put on a loophole management masterclass this weekend. Jackhammer by 34 points in a tight one.
Jack Sheridan, coach of the Chalk Chip Chads, here for my prediction of who will win the grand final this week in the Daft Drafters. And I think it was best said by an Essendon supporter when he said, "I'll tell you what, champion, to put up with the shit we've put up with as a league for the past few years, it's been a fucking nightmare. We hate it. Then for Jim to come out this weekend and pump this arsehole, who's put nothing on us but shit for so long. Get a big dog up your horse, or you fucking deserve it. Fuck you all. I've got Jim by 63.
Hi, Daft Drafters. Just coming to you from Citizens Park. Just dusting off the jet lag after my hashtag Euro Summer. As most of you know, I haven't been particularly keyed on over the last 5 weeks, so I wouldn't expect an in-depth statistical analysis, but I'll probably psychoanalyse these two players more than anything. Without looking at the stats, you've got Jimbo, who absolutely deserves to win. A nuffy at heart and really does his research, has been able to keep up with the time zone much better than others, and really deserves one. But you just can't go past a big game player Horse, or can you? He just absolutely loves championships, this bloke. So, and that's without even getting into the stats. Last week, Horsell has gone 12.58 and has toppled Sam Deboning. Very unfortunate for him, but I'm sure he'll be drowning the sorrows in Turkey. Bent Knobs, second overall on points for the year. Another shout out to Livers, who was on top. And Jim, down at 6 for the year total score. So look, pretty lucky to be in the big dance gym, if I'm honest. Strikes me as a bit of a Sydney versus Geelong from last year. I think Horse takes a chockies. Good luck to both players. It's been a pleasure.